years. It's now time for Law Talk with Brad on Talk Radio 1370 AM. He's here to take your questions regarding law and estate planning at 390-1370. And now, here's attorney Brad Wewell.
Good morning, everybody. This is Brad Wewell. This is Law Talk with Brad. And let's listen really quietly. I hear the pitter-patter of rain. How about it? Thank you, Lord. We have some rain. We got a lot. If you live in Gerald, you know what rain looks like now. You get 13 inches yesterday. But it's a blessing. We're very thankful for rain. And hopefully it'll rain all day today and all day tomorrow and all day Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday, Thursday. And stop maybe Friday evening for high school football games and Saturday for the games. But anyway, we're thankful. And we're thankful you're listening. And we're thankful that you call in. And we're thankful that you email us. And we're thankful for our guests this morning, too. I'm Brad Wewell, and I'm board certified in estate planning and probate law by the Texas Board of Legal Specialization, and with the Wewell Law Firm here in Austin. And all we do is estate planning. And we have a special guest this morning, Candace Bocock, who is the director of probate and trust administration at the Wewell Law Firm. And Candace is here because Candace offers a unique perspective into the world of estate planning. Candace gets to work with folks who've lost loved ones. And a lot of times, Candace, you get to help clean up some messes.
I do have that opportunity, yes.
And so on my side of the practice, I'm more the planner. I get to try to set things up in a way.
Set up the mess. No, obviously not.
Set things up in a way to minimize messes.
Right.
And then we get folks coming into our office all the time who have had work done by other lawyers or work done on their own or work done with software that can be problematic. So we're going to talk about things today that you need to be aware of, things that can cause you a problem. Things that we've seen that you don't want to see in your own family. And Candace, thanks for braving the elements and coming down here.
Well, it's my pleasure to brave the elements. I'm happy that there are some elements finally.
It is nice. It is nice. And we have got a call-in number. And our call-in number this morning, ladies and gentlemen, is 390-1370, 390-1370. You can email us this morning if you've got a question and can't get to a phone. Our email address is askbrad@wiewell.us. So if you've got a question, you got a comment, you got a thought, you can call 390-1370, and Candace and I will do our best to give you an answer to your question. And if you want to, again, you can email us at askbrad@wiewell.us. That's askbrad@wiewell.us. And my lovely and sweet wife, Cindy, is out on the phones this morning, ready to take your call and get it to us so we can give you an answer to your concern and hopefully give you some direction in your life. So give us a call. Shoot us an email. We're happy to hear from you this morning. Okay, Candace, you deal with messes. We've already talked about that. Tell our listeners about some of the messes that you run into and maybe some of the remedies that you can bring to that situation.
Well, the first thing that I find sometimes is people come in and they don't know if there's a will or not. You mentioned all the different kinds of planning. One thing, of course, we do find out is that somebody dies with no planning. Mm. And that is obviously the biggest problem, if they have no planning. Or perhaps they've done planning and no one knows it, no one knows where it is, no one can find it.
Why would somebody do that?
Well, I think it feels to the people left behind sometimes that they did it on purpose just to...
payback?
Yeah, something like that. But, you know, really, Brad, people think they're never going to die. And that when they're going to, it's like, that. Well, okay, I know I'm going to die in 15 minutes, so I'll get everything in order then.
Right.
I don't know. I guess that's what people think. I think really they're just not thinking at all.
Well, I think that's right. And it's interesting to our listeners, and you and I know this, but the worst people out there when it comes to estate planning, in my experience, are lawyers.
It can be lawyers. You're right.
And I think it's one of those things where lawyers, we do, and this is going to shock everybody in our radio audience, lawyers sometimes have egos.
Oh, do you think?
Not us, but the others do, of course.
Right.
And I think that they think, first of all, yes, they're never going to die. And second, that somehow they've got a form maybe that they acquired somewhere along the way, and it's in their computer, and they're going to print it out right before they take their last breath and sign it and have it witnessed and maybe notarized, and that's their will. But, you know, whether you're a lawyer doing something idiotic like that or a normal person out there doing something less than correct, if you don't do it right, you will create a mess, and the mess is going to be a problem. But I'll tell you what, before we get back into messes, it looks like, Candace, we have a call from Brenda on line one. Brenda's gone. Well, then we'll continue our discussion on messes. Hold on one second. It's okay. Where do people go? What's a good place to start to try to find the lost will?
Obviously, you can look in the file boxes at home. But typically, for a long time, people have left them in safe deposit boxes.
Okay, and so where would we go to find that? How many banks are there in Austin?
Oh, gee, I don't know, one or two. So,
credit unions?
Yeah, there are lots of places, so I guess you need to look in, they would need to look in their papers to see where they typically bank. I mean, that's often where the safe deposit box is, but not always. Sometimes if they've lived here a long time, they might have started in one bank and then they've changed banks, but they didn't move safe deposit boxes because they'd had a lease for a year, and then they just forget about it.
Mm-hmm.
So, and of course, along with that, you have to have permission to get into a safe deposit box. So if you're not on the card, then even if you know it's there, you can't get into it just by going down to the bank.
Mm. How do you get into it?
Well, there is a way to go to the court, and it's a fairly simple procedure. You get an order from the court. You just say, we know there's a safe deposit box here. We think the will might be there. We need an order, and typically you can get one.
Right. Now, you're going to need a lawyer to help you with that, though, too, aren't you?
You will, yes.
Right. So I think the reason people don't tell their family, really, two things. One is they forget. It's not that important. And I think also it's a privacy thing where they – a lot of our older clients will say, well, I don't want my kids knowing what I've got, and I don't want them kind of standing over my gravesite checking their watches, wondering when I'm going to die so they can make their car payment or their house payment or something like that.
No, I think you're right about that. You're right. I think it's that generation thinks all of that is private, and I understand that, but at some point it's a discussion that needs to be had with the family members.
I agree. Okay. 390-1370 is our call-in number, 390-1370. You can email us at askbrad@wewell.us, askbrad@wiewel.us. And one of the things that we've started doing at the WeWell Law Firm for some of our life planning clients is we have family meetings. And we had one yesterday, and then we had one last week. We do them on Fridays at 4. And it's a really great opportunity to sit down with the adult kids and say, look, this is mom and dad's plan. And mom and dad are there, or mom or dad are there, whoever the survivor is. And it's nice because you get to lay the whole thing out. We don't go into numbers about how much mom and dad may have, but just kind of how things are structured so the adult kids can understand it, can get used to it, can ask questions, maybe persuade mom and dad to change some provision. We want to get everybody on board because that does help when somebody dies, doesn't it?
Oh, it does. If they come in and they're shocked that something's not the way they thought, or if it just helps if they know already the way everything is structured, maybe who's going to be in charge of the estate, how it's divided. It just helps to know ahead of time.
It does. And have you had situations, Candace, where people did their will so long ago that their executor is no longer with us, and the adult kids who are in the room aren't listed in any kind of capacity?
We have had that. And then it makes it much more complicated in court to try to probate the will if there's no executor listed. And it's obviously, it's better if it's reviewed pretty frequently.
Okay. We've got a call online, one from Barbara. Barbara, Brad Wewell, Law Talk with Brad. Thanks for calling. What can I help you with?
Well, you might not like to hear this question, but I think it's one of those things that you were talking about, why people don't do wills. And my attitude has just been, you know, hey, I'm going to be dead anyway. I don't care what happens to this stuff.
No, I think you're right. I think you're absolutely right. People, you know, I've had people say, I don't mind paying estate taxes because I'm not the one paying them. It's my kids paying them or someone else. And so you are absolutely right about that.
I guess, Barbara, is that kind of your opinion, or are you just expressing the opinion of other people too?
Well, I haven't gotten around to doing one. I got divorced a few years ago, and I've just never, you know, it just seems like I've had so many other things that were on my plate that I haven't been able to deal with it yet. And one of my kids asked me about it because my ex evidently had done one, and she's like, well, you know, have you used a will, Mom? And I'm like, no. And she's like, well, why not? And I was like, because I'm going to be dead, and I don't care what happens to it.
Well, I guess I would offer this. I'd offer a couple of things on that, Barbara. First, your point is well made, and it's hard to argue with it, I guess, in one respect. But the other thing that we see, first of all, nobody likes paying lawyers, and it always kind of hurts to say that, but nobody does. And I'll tell you, I mean, you can maybe save a little money up front by not doing it or not doing it right, but it can be very expensive on your family when you pass away and you haven't done it right. And the other thing out there is that if you have more than one child?
Yes. Uh-huh.
Okay. The thing that can really tear a family apart are fights over stuff.
Yeah, that's true.
And you know, there are ways we have some simple but effective ways of dealing with personal property, your jewelry items, your favorite things. You know, and what's funny is, too, is that kids don't necessarily fight over the big buck stuff. They're not going to go to World War III over a CD or an IRA, but they will go to World War III over, the picture that hung in the kitchen all their lives, and you got it at good night, whatever it was before, Woolworths. You got it at Woolworths 20 years ago for $3.
Or some collection that somebody, mom or dad, spent years collecting.
Right. Somebody wants the whole collection, or somebody wants to split it up or something. Yeah.
Exactly. So,
well, and I guess that makes sense. I mean, it's almost like a divorce. You know, people end up arguing about the strangest stuff.
You do. You do. I mean, you know, yeah, we met with a gal not too long ago who her and her husband have shared custody of the dog.
Yeah.
Well, you know, in a divorce, a pet can be a prized possession, of course, and people spend a lot of money just busting over a darn dog. So,
yeah. I've got a friend that she and her ex do visitation for the dog.
Yeah, there you go. We can have a little visitation schedule, and that's fine. You bet. The other thing, Candace, would be beneficiary designation to make sure that Barbara has those correct, too.
Yes, that would be for life insurance or retirement plans. And those beneficiary designations actually trump what the will says. So it's real important to coordinate those things because
right.
The will may
that's
say,
the thing. You know, I've got all of that sorted out, you know, any investments I have and everything, I've got that sorted out. It's, basically, I'm just signing them on all of them. So, you know.
Yep. Let me tell you one more thing, and this is the biggest thing. It has nothing to do with your death. It has to do with your incapacity. Because if something happens to you, Barbara, way shy of your death, if you don't have disability planning documents, if you don't have a medical power of attorney, if you don't have a living will to pull the plug, you don't have a hip release, if you don't have a financial power of attorney or a living trust, then it may be the judge who has to take over managing your property, and it's your money that we're spending on this thing. And now the judge and not your kids are really in control, and maybe your kids will fight over who gets to be in control and be the judge's helper, to be your guardian. And really the essence of good estate planning is not death planning, it's disability and death planning. And, you know, on a rainy day like today and you slip and slide down Mopac or I-35 or 183 or wherever, and you're in a car wreck and you have a head injury, then you are going to want as much as you can, your son, your daughter, to be able to walk in the hospital, start making decisions for you, and have those decisions on it. And I'm telling you, if you don't have the proper documents, there could be a big problem. Well, you know, that's the problem with kids, isn't it? Let's go back to dogs. There was a good quote. Garrison Keillor was in the paper, I think, said something about, the reason why we spend a lot less on health care for our less fortunate citizens than we do on our pets is that our pets are nicer to us than most people are. So go get a dog and have a great day.
Okay. Well, yeah, that makes sense. And definitely the power of attorney, health and financial makes sense too.
So, yeah. Okay. Well, just go take care of it. It's a smart thing to do. And your kids, if they're urging you to do it, that's a good sign of their maturity too. So go do it, and if we can help you, let us know.
Okay. Thanks a lot.
Great. Thanks again. Have a good Saturday. Bye-bye. All right, Candace, we need to take a break. That was a good call from Barbara. Our call-in number, ladies and gentlemen, is 390-1370. 390-1370. You can email us at askbrad@wiewel.us, and we will see you on the other side of the break. Thanks.
Law Talk with Brad will continue in a moment on Talk Radio 1370 AM. Welcome back to Law Talk with Brad on Talk Radio 1370 AM.
All right. Welcome back. This is Brad Wewell. This is Law Talk with Brad. We're here talking with Candace Bocock this morning about messes that people leave behind. And Candace is the director of Probate and Trust Administration at the Wewell Law Firm. And this is a call-in show. We had one good call from Barbara this morning. And you can call us with your questions on kind of anything to do with estate planning this morning at 390-1370, 390-1370. And you can email us at askbrad@wiewel.us. That's askbrad@wiewel.us. Okay, Candace, we were talking over the break about a really big problem that's out there, and that's how do you find where the money is, and what do you do about passwords and things like that?
It's always been the case that maybe children come in when a parent has passed away and they don't know what banks they had their money in. They don't know where everything is. And we talked earlier about not knowing where the will is. But if you don't know where the accounts were before, we could always say, well, just watch the mail and you'd get statements. And eventually you will find everything. And and you could also look for tax returns.
Sure.
But now you've got an interesting issue that a lot of people use online banking. And so,
well, and they file their tax returns online too, don't they?
They do. And so for a bank account, if you even know that it exists, you might not even, because you've never seen any statements, you don't know that it exists. But let's say you do know that it exists. How are you going to get online? You have to have a password.
Mm.
And you probably are not going to know the password. In fact, this is something that even a husband or a wife might not know. I mean, I had a young widow whose husband had just changed the password on their bank account, and she sat, and he had died accidentally and was fairly young, and she sat and for an hour typing in everything she could think of and just could not come up with a password. So to see that, you would have to know the password. And then to find the statements, how do you get the statements? They email the statements to you.
Right.
And so you've got to be able to get on to their email account, maybe know the password, then get on to the bank account, know the password. And it's just kind of a series of steps that you have to know that you may not know. And so it's very difficult sometimes to figure out what's going on.
Well, and there was a case in Michigan where a young man had died in Iraq, and his father wanted to read his email account, didn't have the password, contacted Yahoo. The Yahoo said, sorry, Charlie, we're not letting you into your son's email account, and he had to go to court and become his son's executor and to access those email accounts. One of the things we do at the Wewell Law Firm is when we do revocable living trust for folks, we transfer their email accounts into the name of the trust. We assign them into the name of the trust. Now, that's nice to say.
Right.
And we believe that it'll work. We haven't tested it yet. But even then, your point about passwords is excellent. You've got to have a password. So what are some ideas do you have for folks to make sure somebody has their password? Because the problem with the password, too, is in the wrong hands. I think I'll just go and empty out this bank account
yes,
while I'm here.
Yes,
there's a sale down at the Corvette dealer, and I'll run on down there.
Well, you're right. That is a problem. And so obviously somebody could just make a list of all their passwords, handwrite them, put them in a safe place, maybe put them in the safe deposit box, but then we're back to where we were. I don't think there's a statute that says we think the passwords are in the safe deposit boxes. Could judge, will you let us get in? So
there's an old song, there's a hole in the bucket. It ends up, there's a hole in the bucket. You end up at the end of the song, there's still a hole
right,
in the bucket.
Right.
So, okay, so do a list.
That's one thing.
And tell your family members where they can find
right,
them.
Right, right. And another possibility is password protection programs. I don't know a lot about these, but I know that it's a program that maybe lists all the passwords. And, of course, to get onto that, you have to have a password.
Yay.
So maybe one possibility is to leave that password someplace and tell somebody, if you need to get on, this is where it is, and then you can get into all of the passwords. So that might work. I don't know.
Right. And let's get back to the whole trust issue, too. I mean, ladies and gentlemen, you just have to trust somebody. And we don't keep our clients' passwords. We've thought about it. We might do it in the future just so there is a repository where we would have it if nobody else would have it. But you got to trust somebody. And it's interesting when we talk to clients about creating a trust, they'll say, well, I don't know about this person. You know, should I put them down? And the answer is, well, you know, yeah, you got to trust them. And that's why they call these things trusts, for goodness sakes. It's not a word just ripped out of the universe. It's because whoever is going to be managing money, you have to trust them. So you need to make sure your passwords are accessible to people that at least one person, not your spouse, in case you're both killed together, but some third party or somebody there's a way to access your passwords because you are going to leave families in an awful wretch. And that poor young woman, young widow, who couldn't figure out her husband's password, I mean, what a frustrating thing that was for her.
I should add that I'm pretty convinced that if you get letters testamentary and you go to court, that they're going to have to give the password out. But you've got to get there first, and you have to even know that it exists,
well,
even to get to
too.
That point.
Sure. You don't know that they've got the E-Trade account.
That's right. That's right.
And you may never find that out. So, folks, you can call us this morning, 390-1370, 390-1370. With questions about estate planning this morning, we've got Candace Bocock here helping out. She is the Director of Probate and Trust Administration at the Wewell Law Firm. We've got the lovely Cindy Wewell out there ready to take your call and give us your questions. We can give you an answer today, too, on this beautiful, rainy morning. It is nice. And so give us a call or shoot us an email at askbrad@wewell.us, askbrad@wiewell.us. So with the young woman who couldn't figure out her husband's password, how did that end up?
Letters testamentary.
All right, so explain that.
That means it's a permission slip from the court, but you have to go to court first. And so what you take a will, if you have one, and you file it at the court, and you probate the will, and that's going to court. But if you don't have a will, you have to still get to court somehow, so you file what's called a determination of heirship, which means, court, we don't have a will, but we need to, for you, court, to determine who the heirs are and who is going to take care of the estate, who's going to get the permission slip. So either way, you've got to get to court. It's much more expensive and time-consuming to do the second way, which is the determination of heirship. But in any event, you've got to get a permission slip, which is called letters testamentary, and that says that whoever you talk to, this is my permission slip to look at the bank account, to access the funds, and to take care of the estate.
Okay. So maybe use that if you don't have the account in a trust to to access the money and figure out the passwords and all that, too.
That's correct.
But let me change it just a little bit, our scenario here, because, you know, usually we think about people doing wills. We picture grandma, grandpa, blah, blah, blah. The problem that we're dealing with this morning, folks, is with younger people. And you younger people, there you go, anybody under 70, how about that? Anybody under 70 who uses a computer frequently. And, you know, it's a real problem because young people, of course, we, 56, I'm young, right, Snoop, how old are you?
What the hell was that?
28. Ooh.
Oh, me too.
Yeah, you're 28. But let's see. We're not going to go there. But you got to do this planning too. You know, you're sitting there, blah, blah, blah. You're in front of your computer right now, probably. You may be on your Palm. You may be on your iPhone. You got all this crap stored in there, and nobody knows where the H-E-double-L it is.
Or how to use it.
Thank you, Candace. Thank you. Come on. We're all intelligent people here, Candace. Yeah. And so young people out there, us under 70s, that are very, you know, use technology frequently, you got to put this stuff in place because you're going to leave a really expensive mess behind and a lot of frustrated family members. And, you know, we all like to think that when we die, we kind of picture our little funeral service and everybody's crying. And, oh, and they're going to be in mourning for months, years. They're going to miss us so bad, and they should. And, you know, when they come in and you left a big bag of not-so-good stuff, it ain't crying for you. They're crying for themselves because of the mess you left behind. And so, you know, everybody has to do this planning, ladies and gentlemen. This is not optional stuff. This is not elective surgery. This is stage 4 cancer, and if you take care of it now, you can be cured, and if you don't take care of it, you're going to get worse, really worse. So, you know, 30-somethings, 40-somethings out there listening this morning, 20-somethings, one of the big areas that we press upon for a lot of our clients is to get their adult kids some planning. Get your adult college student a little will. Your adult college student a little financial power of attorney. Your adult college kid a medical power of attorney. If they get sick in school, they get the swine flu, you're not able, you are their parent by blood only. And in an emergency, there may be an opportunity to make a decision. In the long run, you can't. You're not going to be able to even maybe talk to their doctors because you don't even have a darn HIPAA release allowing the doctors to talk to you. So, you know, this is not just for grandma and grandpa. This is for everybody listening. You got to do it again. This is not elective surgery. You want them crying over the good memories of you. You don't want them crying over the fact that you left them a big bag of poop. How's that, Candace? Make you feel better? I was going to use other words, but we won't on this show. It's a family show. It's a 10-second delay. Snoop's ready to bleep me. All right, Candace. So any other thoughts on this?
Well, you mentioned young people that are tech savvy and able to set up all these accounts in online. And what they also do is try to write their own will online too, or get a software will. When you said that just it's kind of my soapbox and my pet peeve, because those come in and the people that do these are so smart. They're tech savvy. They're smart. They're very accomplished in their engineering field or their accounting field. And they think, well, they can figure this out. And they don't get it right.
Don't do a software will, folks. I'm telling you, it's just, they don't work. We've never seen one that works the way it was advertised. Don't do it. And it's expensive to go to a lawyer. It's not that expensive to go to a lawyer. I mean, it's going to be done right. You got to do it right. Go to a qualified lawyer. All right. We're going to take a break. When we come back from break, we're going to talk about some new laws that the brilliant, back to that word, Candace, brilliant, a real smart Texas legislature has just passed. So we're going to dig into that, and we're going to take your calls at 390-1370. 390-1370. So we will see you on the other side of the break. Thanks.
Law Talk with Brad will continue in a moment on Talk Radio 1370 AM. Welcome back to Law Talk with Brad on Talk Radio 1370 AM.
Okay, welcome back. This is Brad Wewell. This is Law Talk with Brad. We are here taking questions this morning about estate planning at 390-1370, 390-1370. And I want to just remind you about the Wewell Law Firm. We are exclusively an estate planning law firm. We have four lawyers and three offices. We have an office in Austin, near downtown at 16th and Rio Grande, 1601 Rio Grande. We have an office in Georgetown. And on Williams Drive, a little ways between I-35 and Sun City on Williams Drive in Georgetown. And we have an office we just opened in Marble Falls area in Horseshoe Bay specifically. And we're on Farm Road 2147 and right in downtown Horseshoe Bay. You can call us for an appointment. We don't charge for the first consultation unless it's a Medicaid matter. And so you can come in, you can talk to Candace if it's a probate or a trust, somebody's passed away or maybe disabled or whatever. You can talk to me if you want to do some planning, or perhaps Doug Paul. You can talk to Steve Van Winkle if you do have a Medicaid issue. But we're happy to hear from you. We're happy to sit down with you, give you a second opinion on some planning you may have done, help you start some planning that you need to do. We do everything from the simplest wills to complex and convoluted plans too. So we can help whatever your needs are. We do, again, have three offices. The main office number at the Wewell Law Firm is 480-8828, 512-480-8828. And we can set up an appointment at one of our three offices to meet you there. And all meetings are by appointment only, so you do need to make an appointment. We can talk about estate planning, asset protection planning, special need planning. We've had a couple of really nice families in this week who have developmentally disabled children, and we're helping them do some planning. We have done quite a few asset protection plans in the last couple of weeks too. So we can help with pretty much anything you need help with. Give us a call at 480-8828, 480-8828, and you can go to our website. And we have an excellent website, ladies and gentlemen. It's TexasTrustLaw.com, TexasTrustLaw.com. And at TexasTrustLaw.com, you can read about our firm. You can go to our library. We have 12 articles up all the time, a new one this month on blended families. We have 81 two-minute videos where it's me just teaching about estate planning, and then we have some former radio shows we've done in the past if you want to re-listen to some of these shows. So TexasTrustLaw.com. Candace, the legislature meets.
It always does.
It does. Meets for the Texas Constitution says it's to meet 140 days every 2 years, and they just left town in, I guess, June 1st. What sort of merriment did they create for the good people of Texas relating to your area of the practice of law?
One thing that they changed, I think, they passed legislation, is having to do with no contest clauses.
Okay. What are those?
An interorum clause, but better known as no contest clause.
Yes, if we speak Latin around here, folks, you're going to think we're really smart. But
I have to add that.
Yeah, I don't speak Latin, so you don't worry about that. So what is a no contest clause?
That's a clause in a will that says, I leave a certain amount, amount of money to John, for an example. And if he contests the will, he doesn't get this money. He gets nothing.
Okay.
So it's an encouragement to the beneficiaries not to contest the will.
Kind of keep everybody down in the farm.
Right.
All right. And you can put that also, of course, in a revocable living trust as well.
Right.
Okay. So what's new with that?
I think what happens is they actually made it a little bit easier for someone to contest the will. They passed
Lawyers Full Employment Act here?
Well, I don't know. I think there's some discussion among lawyers as to whether it makes it easier or not. But in any event, there's now a statute that they can refer to. And basically, it's unenforceable, the clause, unless probable cause exists for contesting it when they first bring it, and continuing the suit. They still have to have good faith to continue the suit. So I guess what that means is you've got to have a good reason to bring it in order to throw out this no contest clause.
Just because you don't like the will or the revocable living trust, you don't get to necessarily march into court, say, I don't like it, ask the judge to throw it out, and then the judge doesn't throw it out. If there's a no contest clause, I think what you're saying, the no contest clause would say if you challenge this will, if you challenge this trust, you get nothing. But the new law now says, well, if you got a good reason to, then we may not enforce it and we may let you challenge it and win or lose, still get some money out of this deal.
I think that's a good synopsis, yes.
Mm. What do you think?
Well, there wasn't a statute, at least like this, before. Mm-hmm. There was some case law. In other words, the courts had ruled on this to some extent. But it's always easier, usually, to at least rely on a statute.
And so, right. They're the words, black and white.
Right. And so, you know, before it was from the case, now it's from a statute. So it might make it a little easier to contest it. But perhaps it just means that more of them are going to be contested and that there's just going to be more of a mess, as you say.
So, right. Well, we put them in all our wills and all our trusts, as you well know. And the purpose of it, ladies and gentlemen, is to, again, try to keep everybody down on the farm, to say, this is my plan, don't challenge it. Now, the new statute says if you've got good faith and probable cause, I guess to think maybe it had been executed with fraud?
Fraud or just undue influence.
Undue influence, sure. Sure.
That could be perhaps a caregiver sometimes, and you know, a month before the very elderly person dies, they cut out all of their children and leave it to a caregiver.
Right.
And so that might be a reason to bring something in good faith.
Sure, that might be. So if you've got a situation like that, even if the will or the trust says if you challenge it, you get cut out, that might be an exception. But still, I think any beneficiary with that clause kind of looming over their head is going to have to think twice about it, don't you?
Well, I think so. But I want to add to that, I have seen wills that will say, I give $1 or $10 mm-hmm. to X, and if they contest it, they get nothing. And
you know, who cares?
Yeah. So if you're going to put one in, make it a substantial gift or at least something to give them pause about challenging it,
I think. Right. And one of the things that I do like about living trusts, perhaps, is that they're harder to challenge in a couple respects. But one is, once you have the trust in place, and let's say you've got your checking account of the trust and you write checks out of that checking account, you're actually using the trust, and I think it'll be harder to challenge. But either way, the statute does speak to living trusts as well as wills. So if you are out there and somebody you love has got a will that doesn't read the way you thought it should, the trust doesn't read the way you wanted it to, whatever, if you're entitled to some money under that will or that trust, the new statute might help you. But, boy, go see a qualified lawyer. And before you file anything, you better be right. Because if you're wrong and the court finds you didn't act in good faith, you're going to lose your inheritance.
That's right.
Okay, now there's a new law on homesteads.
Yes, right. A new law, and I think, again, this is something that clarified what a lot of lawyers thought was the law anyway, mm-hmm. and that's when you put your home into a trust, you don't lose your homestead protection.
Now tell me about the homestead protection.
What that means is if a creditor can't get your home, except, of course, the mortgage company, if you're
and
not
the
paying.
Tax man,
and oh, always, that just goes without saying for everything. I think is there anything they can't get?
No, there's nothing they can't get, folks. And even those poor people that put their money in Switzerland, they're going to come get that too. So
apparently,
you're all in trouble.
So, and also if there is a second lien, but that's I guess all the same. So they can't get your home in Texas. Now there are some exceptions which I won't go into, having to do with how long you've lived here, but. That's basically the protection that you have.
And so now, I guess just kind of summarize, if you have a living trust and you put your house in the trust, there had been a little bit of a question in some lawyers' minds whether or not you got to keep your creditor protection on your home.
That's correct.
And now?
Now it's clear.
Now it's clear. Another black and white statute by our wonderful Texas legislators. That's good. This is an improvement, I think.
There you go. Yes.
Yeah, that's why they come here, folks. They come here to improve our lives. God bless them. All right. Anything else out there, Candace? We're going to run out of time here in a minute. Give me 1 minute summary of what you think people need to take away from this show, what you see, what kind of practical steps they need to take.
Think about where your planning documents are. Mm. Make sure you have them, of course. make sure that somebody knows where your property is, where your assets are. Think about the online bank accounts or any property that somebody might have a hard time finding or might not know about. Sometimes people don't know about mineral rights in other states. And so
or in timeshares.
Right, right. Or maybe something they've inherited in another state or even in some other counties in Texas a long time ago. Just think about what you have, make a list, and make sure somebody knows about it. People come in sometimes that they find out there are stock certificates their deceased relative had, and they didn't know about it. And so that, you know, 6 months, a year later, that changed everything. So.
Right. Okay. Great. And thanks for coming down here today.
My pleasure.
She's wonderful. She's smart. She's brilliant. She is great. Candace Bocock. And we are done and out of time this morning, folks. It's rainy out there. It's slippery out there. Drive carefully. We don't want any premature probates, do we, Candace?
No, we don't.
No, we don't. Today is Saturday. Tomorrow is Sunday. You need to get your little hiney out of bed, and you need to go to church. Give thanks for the rain. Pray for the country and throw one in for us, too. We'll see you next week on Law Talk with Brad. This is Brad Wewell. Thanks for listening.
Tune in next week for another edition of Law Talk with Brad.